Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest joining us from England is Prince Ezem Inacho, author of Humility of the Brain, drawing on his personal and professional experiences from growing up in his native Nigeria to working within the mental health sector. Offers a fresh perspective and a widely imaginative interpretation of humankind. Humility of the Brain introduces his five fingers theory, which we'll be talking about later on in the show, in which he asserts that man's fingers need to be strong and healthy in their individual capacity, but must work in a complementary fashion for the hand to function at its best. Ultimately, Ize intends to reinforce his belief that the differences found across the world provide a richness and intelligence that otherwise would be missing from our lives. You can find out more about Ize's book, which is available at Amazon.com, on the website. I have a direct link to his book there. Excuse me, a little stumble there, but anyway, you can purchase Ize's book at Amazon.com, and the link is in the show page description. So with that, Ize, we're here on the show. Thanks for joining me today, sir.
I thank you very much, Robert. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I love having international guests on my show because even though we have, you know, there are cultural distinctions and that kind of thing, just I find it fascinating. I love the individuality and diversity of the world. So when I have someone like you who has, you know, been a part of, you know, multiple cultures, again, it's just always fun to chat. You know, kind of like I mentioned in the beginning, you said, you know, even though we have these differences, you know, we're still all one.
Robert, you got it, exactly the gist. It is the differences that make it happen, okay? Without it, nothing functions. And why should you accept that you cannot prepare anything called food with only one ingredient? You need a mixture of ingredients for you to serve food. Alternatively, of course, you would never know you at all unless you saw a short person. So, come on, it's the differences that make it work, nothing else. So you go on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I would first like to start, I usually like to start my shows by having the listener learn a little bit about the guest.
Okay.
If you wouldn't mind, can we maybe get a little bit of your personal history in growing up in Nigeria and kind of what led you to being in England?
Oh, brilliant. I don't know. Sometimes it's embarrassing to talk about myself because I'm quite very shy, as you would have gathered. What it is I happen to come from one of the world's largest families. What it is my grandfather actually happened to acquire, which was quite dreadful in this modern age, 32 wives. You see, so I grew up in a family where at every given moment you have up to 60 children growing up. It wasn't only just my grandfather. All his other five siblings, none married not less than 10 wives. So I came from a very, extremely large family. Though my own father married only one wife, my two parents were teachers. One of the things that I look back on is, I don't know if you've read a bit about the book, I made it clear that I happen to come from a perspective which tells us that those squirrels, you know squirrels? You know squirrels, Robert?
No, what
squirrels.
Squirrels?
You know, squirrels, the little animal called squirrels.
Yeah, squirrels. Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. squirrels. You know, they look like squirrels all over the world. Wherever you see, they look alike, don't they?
Yes, they do, actually.
But their behavior differs from place to place, you see. So when I talk about my upbringing coming from Africa, I always remember that I come from the part of the world where squirrels, at the sight of a human being, would just run and climb the top of the tree as it waits for barrage of missiles, okay?
Okay.
But today, I live in the part of the world where squirrels are happy to mingle with human beings. In fact, squirrels expect human beings to feed them. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Right, yeah.
So what I'm trying to say to you, in a sense, is, you know, growing up as a child and being a son of two teachers with eight children, in fact, though my family, you know, had all sorts of, you know, rich people and poor people, I happened to come from the part that was poor because my parents were just mere teachers. And teachers mm-hmm. in those days didn't have much. In fact, having three square meals, you know, wasn't quite easy. Anyway,
yeah.
So you won't believe it, Robert. I grew up thinking that I was a thief. Do you know what I mean? I grew up thinking that I was a thief. Do you know what I stole?
What's that? What?
Now, I, you know, because there are eight of us, and like I said, feeding wasn't quite easy.
Okay.
If you happen to go in the kitchen and collect food when it wasn't time for everybody to queue up with their plates.
Right.
Well, if you're caught, you have stolen, and in fact, you'll be treated like a thief. So,
oh, my God.
And you see what I mean? So I think when I tell my children this story, they panic. They can't understand it. I say, well, that is the two different worlds I talk about, you see. So my upbringing and I happen to interact with a lot of characters. I began from an early age to reflect on issues of life and the changes in humanity. In fact, through reflection, I was able to project to find out that, look, we really need to look at this world differently. We only need to look at it differently to change it. I happen to feel that the foundation upon which we've laid our lives, the foundation is a bit wrong. And I think a clever child will always look at the building provided by their parents and see whether they need to restructure things or even build mm-hmm. a better one, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I think the hand of history is upon you and me to begin to redesign this world for the posterity of our children and future generation. Because the way we are going, I think we might be running into trouble.
I'm with you there. Yeah, you know, I've often wondered that this trajectory that we're on is, you know, isn't going to get us into a whole bunch of trouble. But it's really, see, to me, you know, the diverse experiences that you have really make an interesting, because I'm sure that in your book you bring that your experiences, you know, growing up in such a large family and then having such, you know, very stringent kind of rules, I guess, you know, that, you
That's
know,
right.
and then to, you know, to make that shift that it, you know, to me, it's like, you know, when you talked about the different fingers and then like the different diversity, to me that's like a perfect example of that, and the key is to get the two worlds to and all the other ones, all, you know, all of the other different, you know, cultures and kind of things, get them together on the same page for the
it's about harmonization. Yeah, how do we harmonize this? Yes, it's about harmonization.
Yeah.
That's right. Yes,
yeah,
which I have proposed anyway. I proposed it. I've looked at it. I've thought through it. I know that the biggest problem we have. I don't know whether you ever came across a book by George Orwell, called Animal Farm. Did you?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Good. You see, I think we are propelled by jungle justice theories. In George Orwell's book, Animal Farm, it was noted that all animals are equal. However, some are more equal than the others. I don't know if you read along those lines. And in this world, you look at the world, all you hear is survival of the fittest, winner takes all, etc. I happen to believe strongly that these are all jungle justice theories, okay? Mm-hmm. Because in the animal kingdom, a lot of animals depend on eating other animals for their survival,
right.
If you know what I mean.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But I think it is time for us to really say no. Though we belong to the animal kingdom in some way, shape, or form, we are human beings. We are rational human beings with superb intellectual ability to be creative, to be imaginative, to be productive. We don't really need to kill ourselves and eat ourselves in order to survive. I'm quite sure you will agree. And I have also found out that I'm quite sure you're not shocked to know that the world is full of resources, to the extent that full of resources. In fact, we don't actually need to share it equally for everybody to be comfortable. We don't need to share it equally. And and also, I can tell you that the world is so big, that it can accommodate double the size of the people living on it now, which stands at about 7 billion. These are all factual stuff. So the question then becomes, how come we have entrapped ourselves in this winner-takes-all? How can a winner-take-all? Doesn't it take the loser? Doesn't it take the loser to make a winner? Can Usain Bolt ever win a race on his own? Now, from the human perspective, how can a winner-take-all? Have you ever won any race on your own or lost any race on your own? It takes the losers to make the winner. Now, we really... And this is, I tell you, this is why I had to come up with this five-finger theory. Whenever you're ready, I'm happy to tell you what it is all about, because I believe that that is the key theory. And then if we understand this key theory and hand it over primarily to our young girls, you know, because I tell you, the key to changing this world is in the hands of women, in the hands of girls. And I'll tell you why.
Yep.
When you are ready, robot.
What I'd like to do is, I think we'll save the starting with the five fingers theory right after the break. Before we do that, you know, I want people to stay tuned to listen to find out what that five fingers theory is all about. We're going to give them a little tease there, you know. But before we do, you know, one of the things that you also indicated, which I think is critical for people to know about you, is that you also have some experience in the mental health sector. So,
absolutely.
First of all, because I think that also figures into, you know, parts of your book and your philosophy overall.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's my domain, mental health. Yes, and I'm so passionate about it. And I'm quite sure you'll be talking. We'll be discussing suicide, because it's something I think we can actually deal with and eradicate. Actually, it's eradicatable when people understand it.
What led you to working in that industry, and what is it that you actually? What did you do? In the mental health industry.
Right. When I came to London in 1989, I had numerous options, but the option that persuaded me most was life. I just sort of grew substantial interest in humanity, in human life, in the psyche of human beings. So it actually mm-hmm. pushed me towards studying social work as a profession.
Okay.
Now, mm-hmm. when I finished that study, which involved elements of psychology and, well, philosophy, looking at the human brain, the mind, now I sort of specialized in mental health because I found that the basis for all our existence comes from the mind, from the brain, from the power of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And any time we have problem with it, if there is any chemical imbalance, everything about the individual is shaken, everything. So I then developed this passion that with stronger mental health, human beings can achieve. Human beings, in fact, that is what can propel human beings to the level that that will get us all to begin to lay this foundation that is required. When I call it humility of the brain is not actually meant to be humble, if you know what I mean. The brain is not meant to be humble, but it had to be forced to be humble because something happened in the body structure. If I have time, I will discuss the real story behind this book, because you remember this book is a story. It's fiction cum reality. So
right.
So I began to develop this immense interest in the psyche of human beings, looking at the health of the mind, because I believe that that is key to appreciating what has gone wrong or what we haven't really considered as human beings. Because we have continuously built. When it comes to technology, that's why I had to give that spiel on the two metaphoric buildings in the book. When it comes to structure in terms of our intellectual ability to create and manufacture things, we have developed enormously. So when you look at the first building, when I was looking at the metaphoric buildings, human beings have moved from gliders to supersonic. We've moved from typewriters to high-powered computer system. We've moved from animal-propelled wheels to unmanned automobiles. We've moved from handmade guns to laser-guided bombs. In this particular building, I mean, the building has become astronomical. It's become a skyscraper. But there is mm-hmm. the other building that actually accommodates human emotion. And remember, when you come to emotion, you're talking about the heart. You're talking also about the head, emotion. When you come to that building that accommodates the human emotion, that building has not moved an inch. Human emotion has remained stagnant. In fact, it's still at the foundation level. It's decaying as I speak. So, but the problem is, it is this other building that accommodates our human emotion that controls this tower, this mighty building, where we have all these new gadgets, all these, you name it, chemicals, biological weapon,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah? So can you see when you look at the interplay between the two buildings, I have actually likened it to placing a fully loaded machine gun at the hands of a 5-year-old, because human emotion has actually remained stagnant and in fact is decaying as I speak. That is why today we have people who are ready to cut people's head off alive.
Yeah.
That is why today, in fact, booking a holiday becomes a chore. The thought you put into booking a holiday about where is safe to go. And don't forget, I'm blaming everything on men, if you know what I mean, because men have led this foundation. I don't want you to forget that. And that's why I think women might provide the solution to our problem.
Yeah, and I'm sure they would agree with that. But you know, as you were describing, you know, the building and the other, you know, the different areas where, you know, we've progressed tremendously skyward, and you mentioned the emotion in the smaller building. To me, it was like I was visualizing as you were talking, you know, what you were speaking about. And then when I got to the emotion one, my immediate thought, and you talked about it kind of staying, my immediate thought was of it is like a power plant in a city, you know, that it's kind of like...
Absolutely.
it provides all of the, you know, the backup for all of those buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, it's one of those things that doesn't get changed or upgraded very often.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Well, your imagination is perfect, because the thing is, if our emotion continues to decay, because you see, human beings are still harboring. There are lots of goods in our world. Let's not just be pessimistic to the extreme.
Right.
But we need to appreciate that, because people have not really understood the real importance of differences, the real importance of the five fingers that are not equal, but they are actually linked to one base, and they are actually meant to be working together. Because people haven't really understood the importance of everything not being the same. Now, we are ripping ourselves apart due to lack of that knowledge. It's easy to have academic knowledge, but I tell you something, if we don't develop in our emotional knowledge, we are in deep trouble, because right now, our world is fully loaded with all sorts of gadgets that can destroy us, just at the press of a button. And everybody has it now. Even our mobiles can detonate bombs. Okay? So, and this is why I had to write this book very quickly, so that perhaps we can begin to see and begin to put measures in place, because we are actually developing at the very... Let me give you an analogy. Have you seen a one-year-old boy, a one-year-old child, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, a one-year-old, yeah?
Uh-huh.
Being able to run like Usain Bolt. What do you think will happen to that boy? A one-year-old, the brain is brain of one-year-old, but he can run like Usain Bolt. That is the state our world is in right now, because we are developing gadgets at a faster rate, and the emotion that is required to control these things is decaying as I speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm serious. Our world is facing huge crisis if we don't stop and think. I don't know if you can imagine what I'm trying to say here.
I do. Excuse me. And you know, and I understand the idea of the advances happening before. Like, you know, right now there's, you know, so much advances in science that when it comes to moral aspects, and that's kind of also, you know, I think part of the emotional aspect that you're talking about, you know, there are things that we can do. The question is, should we be doing it? You know, and sometimes, you know, science just jumps ahead regardless of whether we should or we shouldn't.
All I'm asking here is that we need to develop this emotional side a bit more. We need to bring it up to scratch so it can handle what is happening on the other side. Yeah, so I think it's doable. I've seen it is doable. It's just first of all appreciation of what is at play, and then having the will to put in the right kind of mindset to change it. It's doable. History tells us that human beings have got the capacity to change. Yeah, so we can do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and even you know, especially in today's environment now, there is sometimes a downside to technology, but there's also, you know, very much the upside that with that we have seen. I mean, lately we've seen many examples of people doing good things, you know, coming together for a good cause, you know, and you know, but. And I think it's those kinds of things that you would maybe agree that would help us, you know, working for the good, that would help increase that emotional standing that we have.
Yes, you know, when I cry out loud and say, look, we really need to invest in our women, in our girls, society really need to do this, because honestly, Robert, the vision I see when we do this, our world will suddenly change. Our world will suddenly change. I'm telling you, do you know why? quite simply, and I know you'll agree with me, you know that no matter how well or badly behaved a mother is, no mother alive has ever missed the birth of her baby. No mother. I hope you'll agree with me. But there is every possibility that the best fathers of this earth, okay, will miss the birth of their babies. What this tells us is the powerful link between the womb and the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
That you know that, and I'm being categoric here. Excuse me for my indulgence, but you know that when it comes to the formative years of a child, 0 to 5 years, that's what I know it stands at, 0 to 5 years. So long as death had not occurred, so long as the mother is not suffering from physical or mental health problems, a mother or mother figure usually spends more time with the baby during these formative years than anyone else.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I want you to follow the logic. You see, within these 0 to 5 years is when the foundation is laid for every child.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I say that the greatest crime against humanity is the non-education of the girl child, this is why I'm saying it, because I'm going to explain this and I hope your listeners are listening. I'll be very pleased, even if this is all they took tonight, I'll be very pleased. Now, within these formative years, okay, it is primarily the mother who lays the foundation, because she spends more time, she's likely to spend more time with this baby than anyone else. And I am being categoric here. Fathers will always play a role, and they need to be playing their role. But I tell you something, a child looks at the mother more during this time. A child sees more of the mother than anyone else during these 0 to 5 years. Now, you watch this. There are lots of seeds planted in a child during this time. Some of these seeds will wear off, and the other seeds will come in through association and education as the child is growing. But there are certain seeds planted during these formative years that turn into a belief system. Now, this is why I am saying that most of the evil you see in this world stems from the non-education of the girl child. And education, I mean, is not just academic, it's also moral education. Because what then happens is, like I said, I come from a huge family, okay? Don't be surprised, because there are lots of us in America, in Germany, everywhere. In fact, if you Google Ihe Nacho, you will see a list of names appear. Some of them come from my end. Now, but there are still one or two of us, in spite of our education and our association, we still go back to Africa and we look for the black magic. Can you see?
Mm-hmm.
Can you understand me, Robert? Do you know why? Because during our formative years, these things were planted into our system and they turned into a belief system. So no amount of education, no amount of association will change it.
Right.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, well, you know, and I understand and I agree that the education, because the mothers, caregivers, they're the ones who, basically instill in the young.
They usually lay the foundation.
Right.
They are prime. And this is why I get so angry when the world says children are our future, yet we negate the needs of mothers.
We
are told children are the... And do you know also, Robert, that not only the foundation that women lay during the formative years, women also are better leaders, and I can tell you why. Better leaders, okay, in our secular world, given the opportunity. Now, an academically and morally sound mother will be a better leader than a male equivalent. Do you know why?
Why is that? Because of the nurturing aspect and the... empathy?
Let me tell you why. You see, let me tell you why. Yeah, you see, the female species worldwide, the female species are naturally equipped with not only the multitasking gene, but also the ability to distribute goods accordingly. Hence, a hen. Do you know a hen? A hen.
Right.
A hen that lays the eggs, yeah?
Yes, yes.
Hence, a hen has no problem feeding 12 chicks, okay, with even the smallest food. They will make sure they distribute it to all, okay? Now, the female species carry that gene of distribution, okay? All you need is to equip them academically and morally, and they will distribute accordingly, okay? They will give better service. I'm being very, very honest with you. So the key, in fact, when I lay down my vision for this world, okay, you will begin to find out why. Because the key to making our world better, even to have a good father, you find that a mother was somewhere along his lineage planted the seed. I give you an example of what I mean. Today, I've got four boys who are not afraid of going into the kitchen to cook.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody will see them in the kitchen and begin to praise me. Oh, it's because the father is wonderful. The father cooks. No, it's not just because of me. I go in the kitchen because I saw my father in the kitchen. Okay? Are you going through that lineage now? Yeah? I saw my father in the kitchen, I was able to go in the kitchen. Now my children, my boys are going in the kitchen. But who started that process? It was my grandmother. My grandmother was the one that defiled. She defiled a cultural norm which prevented boys from going in the kitchen. Now, she may have been punished for doing that, but look at the generational impact, that little seed she sowed. Okay? Look at the generational impact. Okay?
Yeah.
Because we are all products of the womb. Whether we like it or not, all of us come from the womb. Okay?
Yeah.
And who is the one that carries this womb? It's the mother. And this is an essential, very pivotal role mothers play in our lives. And if only we can understand it and from an early age begin to invest in that girl child, because I tell you something, you also need to see the children of unruly mothers. When a mother is unruly, because I work in the mental health field, I've been exposed to these things, and I take note of them. I don't ignore them. I take proper note of them. I found that the key to our survival, the key to changing this world, is placed in the girl child's hand. Because once you educate that child, that girl child, okay, both the boys and the girls that come from that girl child will be educated. You can guarantee that.
She will
transfer it immediately. And remember, children only learn through observation. What a child has not heard, what a child has not seen, they would never be able to recreate.
Yeah.
They can't. No.
Yeah.
All those imaginary friends will fizzle away. What will mean something to a child is what they have seen and what they have heard. So just imagine for a second, what would a child be observing from a morally and academically sound mother? What would that child be observing? There lies my case.
Yep, exactly. Well, gosh, we're a little past halftime here, Issa. So I want to take just a real quick break here and invite anyone,
that's
if they would like to call in and ask any questions. They can call in at 619-789-4359. And then when we come back, I want to go ahead and start talking a little bit more about the five fingers theory and then also a little bit more about your book. Okay, everyone, hold on. We'll be right back in about 90 seconds.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again today, my very special guest is Prince Azem Inacho. He is author of Humility of the Brain. And again, his book is available at Amazon.com. And I do have a direct link to his book, which is there in our show page description. So go ahead and click on it and get yourself a copy. So with that, we're back. Iza, Aze.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Goodness.
Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit now about the five fingers. Could we talk a little bit before that break about the five fingers theory? So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm very pleased to talk about this because I think this five finger theory brings us into humanity and takes us out of that animal, that jungle justice theory. Now, when you look at your five fingers, you will find that they are not equal. The five fingers are not equal, but they are all equally fingers. The most important thing about these five fingers is that they are sharing the same base, okay? That's why in our world there are many of us, different human beings, different communities, different nations, but sharing in one world. So you watch this. So you look at those five fingers. They are not equal, but they are all equally fingers sharing in the same base. They are all rooted to the same base, as you can see. Now, the most critical point is that none of these fingers placed itself in the place, in the position they found themselves. They accidentally saw themselves where they saw themselves, if you will agree with me.
Mm-hmm. They're born that
now,
way, yeah.
Okay. Now, what you find is because the shapes are all different, they are coming in with different and peculiar roles to play, okay? Mm-hmm. And for the hand to be effective, they each individually has to be strong, all of them individually, and they must work in a collaboratory fashion. Now, for the hand to be effective. Now, if anything happens to one of the fingers, if one of the fingers malfunctions or stops to function, the remaining four will now overcompensate, and the overall effectiveness of the hand will be weakened, if you can see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and if any of the fingers become cancerously affected, that means it becomes infected,
mm-hmm.
yeah, okay, and it is untreated,
mm-hmm.
if it is untreated, it can affect the whole five, and the whole hand
mm-hmm.
can be rendered useless. Now, you will agree with me that though they are all different, but they are sitting in one base, that they all need to be strong. They all need to be independently strong, but then must pull together, each with its peculiar resources, peculiar
mm-hmm.
strengths,
right.
together to make the whole hand as effective as it should be. Now, this is our world described just in one finger. Okay?
One hand.
So, you get what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Just as you were going through the example, just to let people know, you know, you're talking about, you know, the fingers. I was thinking about a hand holding a cup, and then like the little pinky finger getting burned, and then realizing that the other fingers would have to grip it harder in order to compensate.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Kind of
well done. Yeah. Robot, you're too smart for me. You're too smart.
No, I just like this visual thing.
Thank you so much. You've made it easier for me.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So that is just in a nutshell what the five-finger theory is about. Now think about a world where every mother appreciates this, and from childhood, they begin to implant this into their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Say, look, we might all look different, but we are all essential. We are all human beings, and we are all here to work together and bring in our peculiar resources, our peculiar talent, bring it together to make mm-hmm. this whole... This is why, I don't know if I've given you the story behind this book, the story between the story about the little bird and the body.
That's where I really kind of wanted to move to next. So why don't we go move to that? You know exactly. What the story is about, kind of what you know, and how you have it framed, because it's a story of fiction. So, if you wouldn't mind explaining to the readers why you chose to write it the way that you did.
Oh, brilliant. I chose to write it this way because I believe in metaphors. I mean, and I believe that also human beings enjoy stories. So I had to devise a metaphoric little bird that was destined to live forever, a little bird that only knew immortality. Now, the bird was given the freedom to perch on any tree, fly to anywhere, enjoy itself, and would never die. But one day, the bird had a nightmare. And in that nightmare, it was revealed to the bird that the only human being living within its vicinity was going to kill it and eat it. So for the first time, a bird that knew immortality was confronted with mortality. Now, the bird was also given a clue on how to maintain immortality. It was revealed to the bird that the secret of its everlasting life now lies with a tortoise, that lived 5,000 miles away. The bird woke up in a panic with only one thing on its mind, how to find the tortoise. It flew west, east, south, and north, could not find the tortoise. It returned back to its nest. In the nest, it was still panicking, pacing about, trying to work out where to find the tortoise. As it was pacing about, it felt a gentle touch on its shoulder, and it panicked. It thought the death had come to kill it. When it turned round, there was a guardian angel. To cut a long story short, the guardian angel took the little bird to the tortoise. On arrival, the tortoise said to the little bird, I am sorry, you have come too late. You got to go back. The forces around here do not welcome you. You must return. The bird cried, oh, but I was told that you have the secret of my everlasting life. Do you want me to go and die? Do you want me to go and face death? The tortoise had compassion and said to the little bird, I don't want you to die, but you came very late. Now, if you had come on time, I would have developed a plan for you. But because you are late, I'm just going to give you an idea. You go and develop the plan. And then the tortoise said to the little bird, all you need to do is to find a way to instigate war between the various parts of that person's body. If you can instigate war between the various parts of that person's body, you will have your everlasting life back. The bird went in excitement with only one thing on his mind, to work out a strategy by which it can instigate war between that person's parts of the body. Now, as it was flying, an idea came into the bird, and the bird said, yes, I know what to do. I am going to promise them something big, something they can all fight for, something they can die for. I'm going to tell them that I brought a brilliant news, a mixture of news. The sad part of this news is that the body itself will face an imminent death. The body must die. But the good side to it is that one part will survive. Only one part of the body will survive. The part that survives will not only live forever, but it will be crowned the queen or the king of the body. The coronation will be something that has never been seen and would never repeat, because all the dynasties of the universe will assemble. The great tortoise will be there, and the grandmaster of the universe will appear for the first and only time to coronate this part that survived. But in order to be the part that survived, you have got to prove to the rest of the body parts that you're the most important part, that you are the one without which the world, the body cannot survive. Now, this is what the body, this is what the bird now told the body parts. And then the war broke out. Robert, you're a smart man. Which part do you think started this war to prove that it is the most essential? Which part of the body do you think would have done this? Let me put you out of your misery. Sorry?
Okay.
It was the mouth. Sorry. It was the mouth.
Oh, really?
The mouth.
Really?
Yes, the mouth very quickly jumped in with these words, and I quote, "This is not up for debate. This is not up for competition. There is no contest here. You all know I'm the most important. I'm not only your spokesperson. I house the most venomous part, the tongue. I also house the teeth. But most importantly, I am the source of nutrition. Without me bringing in food and bringing in drink, all of you would die. So I am the most important. I'm the one to live forever." But before the mouth could finish, the hand became upset with the mouth and rebuked the mouth and said to the mouth, "You shut up, you're talking rubbish." The hand very quickly reminded the mouth that, look, I plant it, I harvest it, I cook it, I bring it to you. I'm the one that feeds you. Without me bringing the food, bringing in the water, bringing in the liquid, you have nothing to supply anybody with. Now the hand spoke to the whole body parts and said, "I want to remind all of you that I am the mother figure to all of you. I'm the most important. I am the one that bathes you. I bathe you. I clothe you. I scratch wherever it itches. I'm the one that tends to your wounds. I am the hand. I'm the most important. I'm the one to live forever." Now, before the hand could finish, the leg became upset with the hand and told the hand to clap for itself in stupidity. Now, the leg now told the hand, "You are talking about planting, harvesting, cooking. Who takes you there?" Now, the leg said to the rest of the body parts, "I want you all to know that I'm not just the father figure. I am the father to you all. I am the base. I'm the one that is carrying all of you. I am the conveyor. I am the transporter. If I refuse to move, you all perish. Now, have you all considered what will happen to you if I decide to throw you into a burning fire or throw you into the deep sea? Though I will die with you, but you will all have perished." Anyway, this war raged on. Without going through what each part said, Robert, the brain decided to just wait. The brain was waiting in the wings, wanting all of them to have a go before it came in with a bang. The brain intended to come in with a bang to tell them who the boss is. However, before the brain could make an entry, one part of the body, considered to be the least by some of the body parts, decided to hold the whole body system at ransom. Robert, can you guess which one?
No, I don't
In fact, I would have loved you to throw it out to all our listeners, and anyone that gets it, I will physically present them with the book and sign it for them.
Well, the only thing the only thing I could think of was the heart. For some reason, I kept going back to the heart.
I'm sorry, it wasn't the heart. I hope nobody is eating. But when I'm illustrating this, I have to be factual. I have to be real. I have to be truthful. It was the anus, Robert. It was the anus. I'm sorry.
Okay, I wasn't going to go there.
And I apologize to anybody who is eating or anything. But it was the anus. Do you want to hear what the anus said? That actually, remember, it was the anus intervention that forced the brain to come in with humility instead of coming in with a bang. You know that?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
It was the action of the anus that actually made the brain to reverse, to go into reverse. Now, can I tell you what the anus said?
Okay, go ahead. I have to hear.
Thank you. Now, the anus came in very subtle, very calm, with these words. I have sat here, quite literally, listening to all of you, and the list of what you all did for the body is so long, I can't even compete. I have already heard a few of you gossiping about me, saying how useless I am, and how very little I did for the body.
Uh-huh.
Well, I accept I am useless. I also accept that I did very little for the body. But life has taught me one thing and one thing alone. Life has taught me that it is not much about what you lot think or say about me, but it is all about what I think and say about myself. Now I know my faith. Now I know that I'm going to be one of those that will die anyway. I have decided to withdraw my services henceforth. From now on, no more wind will pass through here, and no more waste will come through here. There you have it, Robert.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, Robert, in a nutshell, this is the story of our world, okay?
Yeah.
This is our world I'm talking about. Because until we begin to see this world as just the human body with different parts, having to do different things, each part useful, each part, every part has something to do. Until we begin to understand this, our world will remain in trouble, because what we have today is a world that is supposed to be working together, fighting each other. A body that is supposed to be working together for the whole body to be strong, fighting against each other due to lack of understanding and lack of knowledge, because the foundation upon which we build is so faulty, we've just carried on building on it. We haven't really stopped to think. We haven't really stopped, okay, to think. Yeah, but it can be done. It can be
done.
That is the story behind the book. In fact, the book comes with a synopsis that tells you that humility of the brain is written in defense of humanity, okay? I have written this book with the intention to defend humanity, because I've just looked at the world. I don't know if you knew that I went to seminary school, but I had to come out because I didn't get the calling. I just waited. I just couldn't see the calling. Mm-hmm. I just realized that it was my father that wanted me to become a priest. Once he died, I just couldn't see what I was doing there. I had to come out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you know that?
No, I didn't. No, but
all right. Okay. Yes, I was an ex-seminarian. Yes.
Yes.
I was an ex-seminarian too.
Yeah. Yeah. Izzy, before we get done, we're down to like 5 minutes here. So let's wrap that up, and then we do want to talk about the one chapter two. The suicidal chapter, because it's something we want to get in before we close. So,
oh, brilliant!
Yeah, so I
very
love
quickly,
that.
Yeah, very,
yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah.
But
very quickly, what I want to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very quickly, what I want to say to listeners primarily is I've actually included that chapter as a self-help chapter because I've worked in the mental health field now for almost two decades, actually, and I have encountered a lot of patients with suicidal thoughts, serious suicidal mm-hmm. thoughts. But mm-hmm. one wonderful thing is that I have not lost any of them. And I said to people, look, if you have any suicidal patient, please signpost them to me because I know that all a suicidal patient needs is the right kind of information and then a message of hope. The right kind of information and a message of hope. The first thing you want any suicidal patient to do is to, first of all, understand what death means, because there are two theories surrounding death. People take these things for granted, but I try to make people look deeper into this so they understand what they're letting themselves into. Okay, then when you understand it, then you will decide whether you really want to do this or not. Because mm-hmm. people carry out this suicide without the proper information. Because at the time they are doing it, they are clouded. They can't right. see the trees from the wood. So you want to prepare people on time so that when that time comes, they can make the right kind of decision. Very quickly, let me just give it out. There are two theories surrounding death. One is provided by science. The other is provided by religion. Science tells us that once you're dead, you're dead. That's it. But you will agree with me, Robert, that no scientist has died before and come back to say, I'm absolutely correct. I died and that was
right.
it. And
right.
also, the other one is provided by religion. But you know that no religious leader has come back to say, oh, I was right. When I died, I went to heaven or I went to hell. Now,
mm-hmm.
they are all theories. I just want people to understand this. I don't know whether I'm eating into your time, Robert.
No, we have a few more minutes left here.
Okay. So the first thing I do with suicide, and that's why I'm asking people, please get this book if you're ever suicidal. In fact, before being suicidal, because time and life will throw something at you that will make you ask the question, is this life still worthwhile living? Everybody will go through that. So I encourage people to go, look at Suicidal, Let's Talk. Read it. It will give you a perspective perhaps you have never considered before in your life. And hopefully it will give you the basis to live on. Because life offers us two things, and they are a guarantee, death and change. When we understand these two, we will stay alive for that change to happen, because change does not actually depend on what you are doing. Change will occur anyway, whether you like it or not. So, in fact, in the book also, you will see the story of a woman who actually died, who killed herself 24 hours before her hope arrived. Okay? She died. If only she had waited 24 hours later, her hope would have arrived, and she would have killed herself. So, I really took my time to write this book, and I've tried to make sure it is not too expensive for people, because I want people to get the information.
Right.
And I'm also asking people to buy because I want to contribute to girls' education. I mean, I've allocated a certain percentage to girls, to organizations that support girls' education, because I believe that is the key, that is the source to change our world and our mindset and human mindset. So thank you for having me. I don't want to really take too much of your time.
Well, this has really been enjoyable speaking with you,
and it sounds like
a fun but yet very thoughtful book. So
thank you.
You know, definitely want to encourage people to get this. So thank you for your time today, sir, and I look forward to keeping
it
up.
You're most welcome, Robert. Anytime.
Okay, thanks
so much. And
thank
take care.
You. Okay, you too. Now, again, everyone, today our guest joining us from England was Prince Issam Netto. He is author of Humility of the Brain. Again, Issam's book is available from Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link to his book there in the show page description. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and until we meet again... Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me,
and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.